Extend Christian greetings to each one. I am happy to be here. Yes, I do take myself down memory lane when I meet up with Steve and Steve Zook and Steve Reber. We spent time together there in the Hess Tire Service, so there's a lot of memories that go around him when I come and see some of these people. Welcome to service here, like they said, but I want to extend a welcome that if you come to New York, to the state or the part of the state that's called Finger Lakes, drive over and find us. We'd like to have you there. And I'd echo that if it's a Sunday, we can sure find ways for you to bless us as well. Make sure you do that. But make sure if you get up there to visit us or that you can stop by and visit us. We enjoy visitors. Congregation there of a Sunday morning attendance of about 130, so it's not clear full where you're going to feel like you maybe should go out the back door, but we'd enjoy having you there to worship with us. But our church building is on the smaller side, so it does get full as well. Close to our place there is a correctional facility. And about 2 years ago, at that time I was installing vinyl windows, and so I was driving a pickup and trailer going to a job. And as I came by this, they were out there protesting whether they were on strike, the workers at this correctional facility were on strike. And they were burning all kinds of stuff out there. It was made you kind of wonder if you should go by or not, because is it safe or not? But we kept going by there, and we soon figured out that they were just peacefully protesting, I guess you could call it. They stayed off the road. They wanted you to slow down, but they were. And that was going on, and one day I was driving by there, and they were all holding different signs, but one day I was driving by and they were holding a sign up that I'm like, what are they trying to say with that sign? I just couldn't hardly figure it out. And the sign looked something like this. It was much bigger than this, of course. But we have 70%, and then my question was, what do you make out of a center symbol like that? And then 100%. And I pondered that. I'm like, what is that center sign? So I actually even tried to Google it, and I couldn't find out there other than, so I just went and typed in correctional facility strike, what's the sign that they're holding up? And I figured out, oh, they're saying 70% is not 100%. That's what they're saying. See, they were in negotiation phase. They were trying to negotiate so that they'd go back to work. In fact, I went and when I first was going to use it for a message, and I was pondering that, I went on my computer and went to look for the sign. It's not there. If you have it on your computer, you have something different than I have. But in the wingdings or everything else of the computer, I still couldn't find it. So, anyhow. As I pondered that, you know, it was a long ways from New York to Missouri. It did feel that way. We ended up driving it overnight. Would I have been here, would I be here today if I stopped at 70% of the way? But isn't that sometimes how we do our spiritual life? We get started. We have a vision. When first I saw the Lord, that vision that the song talks about, that inspiration to serve the Lord with everything we have. And somehow, as time goes on in my own life, I've found it, that I all of a sudden am only giving 70% to the Lord. The question I want to leave with us this morning to ponder is this. Is God satisfied with 70%? These people were not satisfied with 70%. They were telling the high-ups that you are going to meet us at 100% of what we are telling you. That's where you're going to meet us at. And I didn't study into whether they actually met him at 100% or not. But that's what their sign said. We want 100% of what we're asking for. God asks 100% of us today. Give our all. Give everything that we have to him. That's what God wants. So I entitled the message this morning, What is Your Goal? What is your goal? And we, of course, can answer that real easy. And if we're Christians, we say, well, our goal is heaven, to serve the Lord. We want to give him, live faithfully for him, to him. I ask you, are you going to hit that goal? Deer hunters, if you were shooting at a deer and your bullet only went 70% of the way to the deer, would you get the deer? No. Ladies, as you're cooking, if you only put 70% of the ingredients in for something you're baking, would it turn out right? Probably not. I'm not much of a cook, but I don't think so. Well, I'm here to tell you that if you aim at nothing in life, you're sure to hit it. And so the most important thing is to start to aim and to get the vision of serving Christ and to start on that pathway and to give your 100%. That's a very important fact because at least you have the aim right and you're starting there. But the importance is to keep going, to keep the 100% plugged into it. Put the energy, put the effort into your goals to achieve them. If you don't, you're not going to achieve them. You know in life that goals are very important. Or at least I found it so. To have goals is something that can drive you to reach them. If you don't have a goal out there of something to do, you're probably going to be floating all over. To have a goal in a day that I'm going to do this. And maybe sometimes in our busy schedules we don't get it because there's something else that shows that it's more important to do. But if you don't have that goal to finish that in the day, you probably won't even make that. Goals are important. Businesses know that goals are important. Oftentimes businesses have goals for their business. And that helps to keep everyone united and pushing towards reaching that goal. There's a local salt mine, and obviously one of their goals is to have as few accidents in a year that's reportable as they can, because they have a big sign out there by their company, and it keeps changing, and it says so many days since our last reportable accident. And it keeps changing. And they try to see how high they can count that to. Goals for a business. We must have goals in our spiritual life. We know heaven is our goal that we want to get to. We know that's the focus. That's where we want to go. But what takes us to the 70%? It's things of this world is what I find in my own life. Lukewarmness. We lose the focus. We lose the drive. Satan wants to do that. He wants us to turn into half-hearted. Just, I'm still a Christian, but I need this little spot for myself. Not 100% sold out. I'm going to take us to an Old Testament account.
I thought about those verses in Philippians 3 for New Testament. Brethren, I count not myself to have apprehended, but this thing, one thing I do, forgetting those things which are behind, those things we had behind, and reaching forth into those things which are before, I press towards the mark. I trust that's your testimony and my testimony. Press toward the mark for the prize of the high calling of God in Christ Jesus. So keep that in your as for your goal. Now in 1 Kings chapter 3 is the Old Testament account. We had this man, Solomon, the wisest man that ever lived. He had so much wisdom that there was nothing that he, like you could talk to him of anything that you wanted to, and he had wisdom for it. He knew about it, and he could have held a conversation with you very intelligently about it. I believe as I read of Solomon, that's the type of man I see. Just wisdom pouring from his life. And he's looking at this task that has come to him. His father was David. And his father David is passed off the scene, and he's taking over the kingdom. I'd like to just start reading 1 Kings chapter 3, verse 5 in Gibeon. The Lord appeared to Solomon in a dream by night, and God said, ask what I shall give thee. Solomon, as you're a king, ask what you'd have me to give you. And Solomon said, thou hast showed unto thy servant David my father great mercy, according as he walked before thee in truth and in righteousness and in uprightness of heart with thee. And thou hast kept for him this great kindness, that thou hast given him a son to sit on his throne as it is this day. And now, O Lord my God, thou hast made thy servant king instead of David my father, and I am but a little child. I know not how to go out or come in. And thy servant it is the midst of thy people which thou hast chosen, a great people that cannot be numbered nor counted for multitude. Give therefore thy servant an understanding heart to judge thy people, that I may discern between good and bad, for who is able to judge this thy so great a people? And the speech pleased the Lord that Solomon had asked this thing. And the Lord said unto him, because thou hast asked this thing, and hast not asked for thyself long life, neither hast asked riches for thyself, nor hast asked the life of thine enemies, but hast asked for thyself understanding to discern judgment. Behold, I have done according to thy words. Lo, I have given thee a wise and an understanding heart, so that there is none like thee before thee, neither after thee shall any arise like unto thee. And I have also given thee that which thou hast not asked, both riches and honor, so that there shall not be any among the kings like unto thee all thy days. And if thou wilt walk in my ways to keep my statutes and my commandments as thy father David did walk, then I will lengthen thy days. And Solomon awoke, and behold, it was a dream. And he came to Jerusalem, and stood before the ark of the covenant of the Lord, and offered up burnt offerings, and offered up peace offerings, and made a feast to his servants. And you could go on reading there how the wisdom was there that the Lord gave to him of the woman, two women that came with a child, and they both claimed this child. And he said, bring me a sword, let's divide the child in half. And the real mother's heart came out and said, no, just give her the child. The other one said, divide it in half. And he said, okay, the one that said, just deliver, give her the child, that's a mother. That's a mother's heart. Wisdom that was given to him. I see in these verses Solomon, a king, that was following after David, his father. And he was asking, he viewed the job of leading these people. And he said, it's too hard. It's just too much. I don't know how I'm going to do this. When I look at how David, my father, led these people. And Lord, as you were with David, my father, now it's my turn to do it. And I don't know if I have it. Where did he turn to in his dream? It was a communication with the Lord. And Solomon was goal in life. At this point, as he viewed God's people, his goal was to give 100% in leading these people, to lead them right, to lead them towards God, for God, and to do absolutely his best. That's why, as I read these verses, he was 100% plugged in. He wanted to do his best. He wanted to give of his all. His goal was to serve God with a whole heart, everything he had. He gave his best in the work he was called to in leading the people. We could go to chapter 4 of 1 Kings chapter 4, and we see Solomon. And we're not going to take time to read all these verses that I have, but I want to take you on the journey through it and think about Solomon. Chapter 4, we find him. People coming from all over to hear the wisdom of Solomon. He is such a wise man. It's just, he's got wisdom for everybody. If you need counsel for anything, come to Solomon. He knows it. He can spit it out. People were coming from all over. And I don't know if this is a start of it, when it seems, as we look at the life of Solomon, whether he was starting to let the wisdom that God gave him go to his head. I don't know that. But I believe he was still serving God. He was still had that as his goal. He was still 100% plugged into serving God. That's in chapter 4. Now we come to chapter 7. And I find it very shaky ground when you think about Solomon leading the people. He's building his own house. He finished 13 years, he finished all his house. And what I see happen here, remember at the start, to me, he was, when I look at the life of Solomon at the start, he was 100% serving Christ. He was 100%. He wasn't satisfied with 70. He was 100% in for serving Christ, and he was giving it his all. All his wisdom was poured into that. In chapter 7, I see him to start building his own house, and he starts living for self. He starts letting 5% is pretty much for self. It's not wrong for him to build a house. That's not wrong. But there's something, he lost that initial vision of serving Christ with all he had. And he built this great house, and it goes on to describe it. And there was none like it. Costly stones, many things about it. But it seems like he's shifting to that self. And now go to chapter 10. We didn't read many verses there in 7, but just think about this journey that Solomon is on. He started out 100%. And he comes to chapter 10, verse 14 down through. And I see as he built that house, that 13-year house building that he had, and in chapter 10, he is now, the focus has shifted maybe 25%. I won't give percentages. I shouldn't do that. But what his goal is not to lead the people and the wisdom for them. Yes, he still kind of has that there. But it is now in chapter 10 shifted to wealth, prosperity, materialism. That's starting to get his focus. It's no longer serve Christ with 100%, lead these people, give to these people all I can. But now it's like wealth, materialism, what can I have for myself? And that just says the Queen of Sheba was there. That's what is in chapter 10 there. And I just see that coming out through that passage there. You can read it sometime. We're not going to take the time this morning to read that. Where we want to read is in chapter 11. First Kings chapter 11, 1-8. But King Solomon loved many strange women together with the daughter of Pharaoh, women of Moabites, Ammonites, Edomites, Zidonites, and Hittites, of the nations concerning which the Lord had said unto the children of Israel, ye shall not go into them, neither shall they come in unto you. For surely they will turn away your heart after their gods. Solomon clave unto these in love. And he had 700 wives, princes, and 300 concubines, and his wives turned away his heart. For it came to pass when Solomon was old that his wives turned away his heart after other gods, and his heart was not perfect with the Lord his God as was the heart of David his father. For Solomon went in after Ashtaroth, the goddess of the Zidonites, after Milcom, the abominations of the Ammonites, and Solomon did evil in the sight of the Lord, and went not fully after the Lord, as did David his father. Then did Solomon build an high place for Chemosh, the abomination of Moab, in the hill that is before Jerusalem, and for Molech, the abomination of the children of Ammon. And likewise did he all for all his strange wives, which burnt incense and sacrificed unto their gods. How do you get to this point? How do you get from a vision of leading God's people right to suddenly you're okay with having these strange women that the Lord had said you're not to have? The Lord had told the children of Israel, you go after them, they're going to lead your hearts astray. Solomon, in his wisdom, was leaning on his own wisdom, and he said, I can do it myself. I really think in his life he was saying, I can stand against it, but he didn't. His goal has now shifted from wanting to lead God's people right to doing evil in the sight of the Lord, exactly against what the Lord had told them not to do. And what happened? You go on in chapter 11 there was an idolatry and spiritual decline in the people of God. It went right through the camp of Israel. It was no longer just Solomon that was affected by it, but it was the people that he was leading. The end of chapter 11, we find the kingdom in division and conflict. They're head to head. They're in conflict with one another. Solomon's wrong goals of power, prestige, and following strange gods, and no longer being 100% plugged in for the Lord, led him to this place of division and conflict in his kingdom. We take this journey and think about Solomon, that wisest man that ever lived. And I want us to think about ourselves today. We are handed so much as Christian people. We have the truth of God's word that we can read. We live in a land of freedom where we can read it. We have it. We have church brothers and sisters that want the best for us. But you and I have to make the decision of whether we're going to continue to be 100% plugged in for serving the Lord, or whether we're going to try to somehow be okay with 70%. God's not satisfied with it. And you will find yourself struggling with the very things that Solomon did: wealth and materialism, conflict and division. You will. You will find yourself, maybe I can just point this to the young man especially. Young man, you will find yourself where you would really like to get rid of some for what you can call, feel like big sin in your life.
But you just struggle with it and you struggle with it. But over on the other side, you feed on a little wrong music. Brothers and sisters, it goes hand in hand. You can't be victorious unless if you're 100% plugged in. If you're not willing to go to the 100%, you will continue to struggle and have defeat. You must be 100% committed. Go the whole way and be willing to do it. Now we're going to go leave 1 Kings and we're going to go think about Solomon. What did he say about his life? Ecclesiastes. I know some people, scholars, maybe question a little bit about Ecclesiastes. Who wrote it? Who didn't? I'm one of those people that I do believe that Solomon wrote Ecclesiastes when he tells in the start of Ecclesiastes that he's a words of preacher, the son of David, king of Jerusalem. I think it's Solomon. Seems pretty cut and dried to me. But Ecclesiastes is this man, Solomon, and he's viewing life, is the way I understand as I read Ecclesiastes. And he's viewing his life, and he's just wrestling with life. I tend to do that too, just wrestle with life. What is really happening? And he just, when you read it, sometimes you're wondering where he's coming from. But then all of a sudden, in the midst of it all, he breaks out into these wonderful words that is 100% for us today. And chapter 2 is one of them. Ecclesiastes chapter 2. I'm just going to read just a little bit of it. Just think about this man wrestling with his life. We looked at who he was, how he lived. And now I believe he's looking back and thinking about it. I said in mine heart, go to now, I'll prove thee with mirth. Therefore enjoy pleasure, and behold, this is all vanity. This is vanity. I said of laughter, it is mad, and of mirth, what doeth it? I sought in mine heart to give myself unto wine, yet acquainted mine heart with wisdom, and lay hold on folly, till I might see what was good that for the sons of men, which they should do under the heaven all the days of their life. I made me great works, I built me houses, I planted me vineyards. I made me gardens and orchards, and I planted trees in them of all kinds of fruits. I made me pools of water to water wherewith the wood that bringeth forth truth, trees. I got me servants and maidens, and I had servants born in my house. Also I had great possessions of great and small cattle, above all that were in Jerusalem before thee. I gathered me also silver and gold and the peculiar treasure of the kings and of the provinces. I got me men singers and women singers and the delights of the sons of men as musical instruments and in that of all sorts. So I was great and increased more than all that before me in Jerusalem. Also my wisdom remained with me. And whatsoever mine eyes desired, I kept not from them. I withheld not my heart from any joy, for my heart rejoiced in all my labor, and this was my portion of all my labor. Then I looked on all the works that my hands had wrought, and on the labor that I labored to do. And I said, that is just the blessedest thing. I had the best life of it all. And did you catch what America's? He was doing exactly what the spirit of America is. He was getting just exactly what seemed to make him pleasant and joyous for the occasion of today. That's what he was doing. But he did not answer like I finished up verse 11. That's not how what he said about it. He looked at everything that he had done at the start of verse 11. And behold, it was all vanity and vexation of spirit. And there was no profit under the sun. It was empty. It was an empty life. He had all the wisdom. He had all the riches. And he just viewed his life and said, that is just the most foolish thing. We could keep reading there. I think I have my point made of what I'm trying to pull out from this man. But there's more that he says. And then he just breaks out and says the very same thing. It's just all vanity. It's just not worth anything when you look at the big picture.
Go to chapter 12. As he writes Ecclesiastes, there's more we could pull from this, but we're just going to jump back to chapter 12. He comes out with, as he keeps pondering and wrestling with life and what he saw of his own life. And he talks to, in chapter 12, he talks to the young men. He says, remember now the Creator in the days of thy youth. Remember that. The Creator, the God of heaven, remember Him. Verse 8, he says, vanity of vanities, all is vanity. And this preacher keeps talking. Verse 13 is where I want to think about. Solomon is viewing his life, and he tells us today, young men, young women, fathers, mothers, old men, old women, here's the conclusion. This is life. As I, Solomon's saying, as I look at my life, this is the most, if I could have kept the goal at the start and 100% plugged in back then, this is what we need to do. Verse 13, let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God and keep His commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. This is what's the most important thing in life. This is what man is called to do. Because why? For God shall bring every work into judgment with every secret thing. That thing that you're thinking that you're going to hide, nobody's going to know. Solomon says that's foolishness. For God shall bring into work every work into judgment with every secret thing, whether it be good or whether it be evil. God knows everything. He knows all about us. We can't hide from Him. For us today, we say our goals are to serve God with our whole heart. But what we do in our daily lives, where our focus is at in our daily lives, will show what your true goals are. Fathers, don't think you're hiding that from your children. They know. How do we get to our goals? A few points yet. Think about choices. We can't hardly go into that without thinking about choices. Choices in life affect whether you're going to reach your goal or not. You may say, well, I won't answer in the choices. I'm just going to not really make a call on that one way or another in my life. I'll just try to find the middle ground. I'd like to just tell you that that approach to life is like a multiple choice question. You either pick the right answer, or it's wrong either way. To answer nothing is still wrong. What is your choice in life? Our choices influence and are often are an indication of where our goal is. Yes, it is. Why? Because our choices are often based on the 70% or the 100%. Our choices reveal whether we are there at 100% or not, or whether we have self in there. Life is full of choices between two destinies. It's either heaven or hell, that's all there is. And you are choosing every day. God's not satisfied with 70%. Either you're giving 100%. Or in Revelation it talks about the lukewarm. He said, I will spew you out of my mouth. He's not happy with the 70%. To do nothing in life is making a choice. of where we are going to go in eternity. May God help each and every one of us to be 100% plugged in for serving the Lord. I'd like to read those verses that I start, or say those verses that I started out. Brethren, I count not myself to have apprehended, but this one thing I do, forgetting those things which are behind and reaching forth unto those things which are before. I'm giving 100% and pressing towards the mark for the prize of the high calling of God in Christ Jesus. And I want that to be your testimony this morning. The race. Whenever I start to hang my head in front of failure's face, my downward fall is broken by the memory of a race, a children's race, young boys, young men. How I remember well, excitement sure, but also fear, it wasn't hard to tell. They all lined up so full of hope, each thought to win that race, or tie for first, or if not that, at least take second place. Their parents watched from off the side, each cheering for their son, and each boy hoped to show his folks that he would be the one. The whistle blew, and off they flew, like chariots of fire. To win, to be the hero there, was each young boy's desire. One boy in particular, whose dad was in the crowd, was running in the lead and thought, my dad will be so proud. But as he speeded down the field and crossed a shallow dip, the little boy who thought he'd win lost his step and slipped. Trying hard to catch himself, his arms flew every place. Amidst the laughter of the crowd, he fell flat on his face. As he fell, his hope fell too. He couldn't win it now. Humiliated, he just wished to disappear somehow. But as he fell, his dad stood up and showed his anxious face, which to the boy so clearly said, get up and win that race. He quickly rose, no damage done, just behind a bit, that's all, and ran with all his mind and might to make up for his fall. So anxious to restore himself, to catch up and to win, his mind went faster than his legs. He slipped and fell again. He wished that he had quit before, with only one disgrace. I'm hopeless as a runner now. I shouldn't try to race. But through the laughing crowd, he searched and found his father's face, with a steady look that said again, get up and win that race. So he jumped up to try again, 10 yards behind the last. If I'm to gain those yards, he thought, I've got to run real fast. Exceeding everything he had, he gained 8, then 10. But trying hard to catch the lead, he slipped and fell again. Defeat. He lay there silently, a teardrop from his eyes. There's no use running anymore. 3 strikes, I'm out. Why try? I've lost, so what's the use, he thought. I'll live with my disgrace. But then he thought about his dad, who soon he'd have to face. Get up, an echo sounded low. You haven't lost at all. For all you have to do to win is rise each time you fall. Get up, the echo urged him on. Get up and take your place. You were not meant for failure here. Get up and win that race. So up he rose to run once more, refusing to forfeit. And he resolved that win or lose, at least he wouldn't quit. So far behind the others now, the most he'd ever been. Still he gave it all he had and ran like he could win. 3 times he'd fallen stumbling. 3 times he rose again, too far behind to hope to win. He still ran to the end. They cheered another boy who crossed the line and won first place, head high and proud and happy, no falling, no disgrace. But when the fallen youngster crossed the line in last place, the crowd gave him a greater cheer for finishing the race. And even though he came in last with head bowed low, unproud, you would have thought he won the race to listen to the crowd. And to his dad, he sadly said, I didn't do so well. To me you won, his father said. You rose each time you fell. And now when things seem dark and bleak and difficult to face, the memory of that little boy helps in my own race. for all of life is like that race, with ups and downs and all. And all you have to do to win is rise each time you fall. When depression and despair shout loudly in my face, another voice within me says, get up and win that race. May God bless you. Let's kneel for prayer.